Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's take a journey.
Well, here's a story for you.
We'll
Sarah
start
Perry
in Maine.
Was a veterinarian nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory.
So she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower.
Hear that?
Yeah. And now, let's move on down to New Hampshire.
The woman gave her a letter from the vet about her goose. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from foot and mouth disease, which was very rare, because normally you would only expect to see it in a goat.
And then cross back into Massachusetts.
That itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling Karma, Karma, which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name.
Of course, you're hearing the New England accent. Now, while each accent is as unique as the state, city, and county it comes from, in the tape you're hearing, you can really hear those common characteristics that do let you know that, yes, you are talking to a New Englander.
There was a time when you'd have to travel west of Vermont's Green Mountains before those dropped R's would disappear and give way to other American accents. But a new study finds that the New England accent is receding, both geographically and generationally.
And we're joined now by the authors of that new study. It's entitled Farewell to the Founders, Hello to a New New England, Dialect Changes Along the East-West New England Border. James Stanford is a professor of linguistics at Dartmouth College. He's one of the paper's authors. Professor Stanford, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for joining us today. Also with us in the studio is Kenny Baklowski. He's a recent graduate from Dartmouth who was one of the co-authors of this paper as well. Kenny, welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Professor Stanford, let me start with you. First of all, we were hearing several New England natives from various states reading a passage from a story called Comma Gets a Cure. What in particular did we hear in all that tape that lets us know, yes, we're listening to New Englanders?
Yeah, so every dialect is a complex mix of different sounds and words, and so each person is going to use them in different ways. But yeah, some of the most classic features that we find in the Eastern New England accent are dropping of an R and also changes in the words father and words like that. So for example, the most famous one would be what we call R-less speech. So this would be pronouncing a word like New Hampshire as New Hampshire, so that we call R-less speech. Then we also find cases where a word like father changes so that it sounds a little bit more like fada, that the vowel shifts a bit, whereas for some speakers, father and bother might rhyme, but in some Eastern New England speakers, you get something more like fada and boda, where mm-hmm. they don't rhyme. And then with words like bath and laugh and calf, sometimes, especially with older speakers, you get something that sounds a bit more like both or laugh. So those are some of the features. There's a wide range, but in our study, we focused on some of the classic stereotyped features to see what's happening with them.
Some of the better known hallmarks, absolutely. Now, your paper was very fascinating to me because in the study, you note that there were actually some personal experiences that you and your co-authors had that made you want to look into where this classic New England accent is sort of shifting to. So what was happening with you and your co-authors that made you want to look into this?
It's definitely, so I live in a small town over on the western side of New Hampshire, and I noticed interesting cases where some of the older, middle-aged and above speakers in our neighborhood or just friends that we knew had some of those features, but their children didn't. The children seemed to be leveling out to more of a wider standard. And I found the same thing when I was talking to students in class, including Kenny, of cases where the younger generation seemed to be losing some of those, especially some of those stereotyped features.
And Kenny, so tell us a little bit about your experience. You are that younger generation.
Indeed. I grew up in Waltham, Massachusetts, in the suburbs out west. And in case you can't tell, I don't really have the R-lessness. I don't really sound like I'm from Boston. I had some friends who were. I had some friends growing up who had the strong Boston accent. You know, they'd say wicked all the time, so to speak. But then You know, I just didn't really have the accent myself, and I got to college, and none of my friends did as well.
But what about so at what point in time did you notice that none of your friends did? Because I imagine that, you know, your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, how long has your family been in the region, by the way?
Let's see. My grandmother is from the Waltham area, and she has a gorgeous New England accent. She actually says, go take a bath. It's wonderful. But my parents, they do not have the Boston accent really at all, and I do not, and I just did not grow up with the accent really whatsoever. I had some friends who had it, and they were the Boston accent kids, you know, and there are a couple of them up at Dartmouth College, you know, and everyone knows them, you know, they can pull out the Boston accent and entertain people at parties. But really, that's about it. You don't hear it much at all.
Well, Professor Stanford, it's curious to me because basically your research began with the notion that there's been quite a bit of linguistics research done about the New England accent or accents, I should say, over decades, if not, you know, close to a century. And at one time, it was noted that the Green Mountains in Vermont was kind of the border between the classic Eastern New England accent and a Western New England accent. Why is it that at that time, the Green Mountains was where those dropped R's sort of faded away?
Yes, it's a really interesting pattern that we found. So in the 1930s, there was a famous study by Hans Kurat, which found that border along the Green Mountains. And he traced that back to the original settlers. So that's why we called our paper Farewell to the Founders. You had this original founding settlements of the Europeans who'd came in. And they were based primarily in the Boston area, and those speakers had, a large number of them had come from Southeast England, which at that time was shifting toward this R-less pronunciation, so saying New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And so what Hans Kurat argued is that pattern that was laid down by those original founders up in northern New England stayed for generations and generations, so that when he studied it in the 1930s, he found that clear mark between the Green Mountains, west of the Green Mountains, of not having that set of features, and then the eastern side. And then a similar study followed up in the 1960s. So what we wanted to do was to see what's happening now. So we actually set this up as a class project. The students went out to different senior citizens' lunch centers and interviewed senior citizens as a way of comparing with the original speakers in the 1930s study to see what had happened over 77 years.
So, Kenny, you were one of the people who went out and did that research. Where did you find this new east-west border exist now?
Well, we definitely found that the border has shifted. There are older speakers who did not have this accent right along the Connecticut River. And, of course, you know, there were some that did, but most of them were east of the river. In New Hampshire as opposed to Vermont. And a lot of people noted that the dialect is really between Vermont and New Hampshire these days.
And I was reading that some people also go so far as to say that the dropped R's really now has receded to the point where it's strongest in parts of Maine, eastern Massachusetts, and Rhode Island, that even in much of New Hampshire, you're seeing people say their R's more than they used to.
Absolutely. We interviewed this one lady who was R-less. She had the old accent. It was great. But she was telling us, you know, everyone thinks I'm from Boston. Everyone thinks I'm from Boston. I've never moved from this town in my entire life.
Wow.
So people seem to have forgotten, or, you know, not that they ever had to know, that R-lessness was actually part of the accent. Now it's just no one does it. No one even really notices anymore in a lot of parts.
So listeners, we're talking about the receding borders of that classic New England accent, or the hallmarks of classic New England accents. When you were growing up here, did you remember your parents or grandparents speaking with dropped R's, speaking with those wonderful vowels that we've come to associate with the New England accent? And do you speak that way now? Why is it that you think maybe the borders of the way New Englanders speak is shrinking? What's causing that change? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Professor Stanford, hearing Kenny describe the fact that people in New Hampshire themselves now have forgotten the way that that maybe their parents or grandparents used to speak makes me wonder, do you have a theory as to why the change seems to have happened so relatively quickly within a generation or two?
Yes, it's really an interesting pattern because we're finding this dramatic change. And in fact, and sometimes we find even within the same household, there's a change. So we've been doing some recent work in central New Hampshire. We're trying to look at some speakers in the central part of the state now. And we have several people on tape where a grown child living in the same house, let's say a child and a 20-something child living at home, is speaking with a leveled dialect. In other words, they don't have the RLS features or these other traditional features. Then we interview a parent, and the parent does have those features. So there's a dramatic change happening even across generations, especially in central New Hampshire and then going out to western New Hampshire.
Now, I know that some people might just sort of automatically presume that, you know, media might be one of the reasons that everyone watches TV. You know, when they watch TV, everyone speaks the same way. And there isn't sort of that wonderful regional stew of voices on television as there are in our real lives. But I've read linguists say that media and television isn't actually the greatest force when it comes to changing how people speak.
Right. So what we find is that speakers tend to develop an accent based on their older peers as they're growing up, so older siblings or older peers around them. So a lot of it is happening in face-to-face interactions. So, of course, media has some sort of long-term effect, but the greatest differences are happening through interactions, personal interactions. So our analysis of this situation, Northern New England, would be based on a greater connection to a wider range of speakers. So, for example, in the 1960s, 1970s, you had the Flatlander invasion, that they call it up here, where you had many people moving up from Massachusetts into the New Hampshire area, and then especially from New York up into the Vermont area. So you got an increasing amount of interactions, and the interstate system came in. But also we see a lot of changes just in the lifestyle up here. So whereas in the past there was primarily an agricultural focus, the younger people of the current generation are often much more outwardly focused. They may not be thinking in terms of living long-term in northern New Hampshire, or they may not, or northern New England, or they may not be planning to follow the same occupational choices of their parents. So we think that a lot of these patterns are shifting as the younger generation has different identity and different focus than previous generations.
Kenny, that is you. I mean, mm-hmm. Do you feel that way, that that you're sort of more focused on where you could go versus you know, sort of the mental space of staying where you were born and grew up?
Absolutely. When I try to think of my friends who have the strong Boston accent, they're the kids who are really proud to be from Boston. And don't get me wrong, I am.
And I'm why
proud
not?
Exactly. I am proud to be from Boston. It's just when you get to college, it's this, I don't even know exactly how to describe it, and I haven't done the study to get the results, but everyone has a sort of general voice. It might be, you know, if you're open to living somewhere else, maybe you're not necessarily tied to your older accent.
But let's flip it over to the other side, though. Do you feel like maybe you've lost something?
I certainly do. I feel like I can't even fully reproduce the Boston accent, and it makes me sad. It really does.
Well, let's take a couple calls here. Laura is calling from Quincy. You're on the air, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's your thought today?
So I used to have a very thick Boston accent. I was raised by my grandparents, who say things like bah and, you know, pakaka and havidya. And when I was about 16, I went on a mission trip to West Virginia, and I was with a lot of other people from around the country, and it was really a big focus. It was like, oh, you're from Boston, oh, say this, say that. And I really didn't like that attention. I was much more cognizant of it after that experience. And I changed my accent because of that, because it sounded so different. And I got to a point where I thought it almost sounded less educated. And I really do think that that is one of the big differences now with younger people, is there's so much globalization and education, and we are exposed to many more accents, and so we kind of take those on through experience.
But Laura, if I could ask you, I mean, you're back in Quincy, you're in Massachusetts, but the accent didn't come back with you.
Well, no, it took me a long time. I was 16 years old when I had that first experience, and then I went to college in Washington, D.C., and yeah, I'm back in the area now. But it was something that I worked on for a while, you know, as an older teenager, like, and into college.
Thank you so much for
college.
I'm sorry, Laura, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I did want to thank you so much for your call. Let's take another call from Quincy. Amy's on the line. You're on the air, Amy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So my experience really parallels Laura's experience. I grew up in Quincy, and we moved from Quincy in 1988 when I was 12 to New Hampshire, and I was pretty viciously made fun of by my new classmates in New Hampshire. And over the next 7 years or so, my accent just disappeared without me really thinking about it. And I noticed that everyone in New Hampshire, they had already, no one had that there at that time. None of their parents had that. I was considered very regionally Massachusetts, and it was a stigma going up into the mountains that I had this Flatlander accent.
Amy, thank you so much for your call. This idea that authentic regional accents can carry a stigma is one that we've heard quite a bit on our various Radio Boston programs that we've done looking at New England accents. But Professor Stanford, in the paper you wrote, there was this paragraph that really jumped out at me that say even around Dartmouth up there in Hanover, social attitudes towards the function of the university in the community, like people who saw Dartmouth as a positive thing, tended to have their R's versus people who see Dartmouth as maybe a version of the other, not something that they personally connect to, dropped their R's. I mean, that's a sort of an intimate example of how sociology really has an impact on how we choose to identify ourselves through our speech.
Yes, that's a very good description of what's happening. Yeah, and that was a study by Sarah Villard. It was a master's study where she looked at people in this area around Dartmouth, the Hanover area, and that she found that if people had a positive attitude toward Dartmouth, they were more likely to pronounce their R's. And so it definitely is good evidence that there's a social factor involved.
Let me ask you.
I also should point out that even though these traditional features seem to be fading, we wouldn't want to say that dialects across the U.S. are fading away, because what we find actually is that in many situations, new features are arising. So we have the northern cities vowel shift around Chicago and the inland north Great Lakes area of the U.S., which is kind of coming in below the level of conscious awareness. So it seems to be the case that some of these traditional features tracing all the way back to the European settlers have become so stereotyped and so salient that now younger generation, in some situations, at least in our study, younger generation is starting to level those out. But at the same time, language is always shifting and changing. People are always using language to express different identities. So things are coming up in other places. So we don't have to say that dialects are being lost, but rather it's just certain features are fading away and new things are coming up all the time.
You had actually anticipated my question, because I was starting to feel this upwelling of sadness about the shrinking New England accent. But Kenny Baklowski, my last question goes to you. You are of the younger generation that's sort of affecting this linguistic change. How has being part of this study sort of changed your understanding of this region of the country where you grew up?
Man, it's really given me an incredibly broader just understanding of the broad picture of our dialect. I mean, why would you even really know about that otherwise? But it just, I don't know, it makes you understand these small towns and just the history of everything. And, you know, I don't know, there's something heartwarming about it. You feel like you're more from New England that way.
Kenny Baklowski is a recent graduate from Dartmouth College, and Professor James Stanford is also a professor of linguistics there. They were both part of a new study on the shrinking New England accent. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.